Good afternoon. My name is Sonia Myers, and I am presenting the topic along with you today related to nurturing yourself, or nurture thyself, it is good for you. What I want to tell you first and foremost is that I am a professional nurturer. That is my job. That is what I do. I am a nurse. And the root of nurse is nurch. And there are some similarities related to what I do and that root word. In the dictionary, often you hear of a variety of definitions, but let me just read some to you. Nurture is to feed or nourish, to support and bring up to maturity, to rear, to foster, to cherish, to bring up, train, and educate, to discipline, chasten. Some synonyms to nurture are foster, nurse, cherish, cultivate. And some contrary terms are neglect, overlook, disregard, and ignore. Those are the dictionary terms of nurturance. And I have a great deal of interest in nurturance from my professional background as well as my personal background. I'm also a wife and have been for 20-some years, as well as a mother of three children, 15, 12, and 9. And they continue to present challenges to my abilities to nurture and to be consistent with nurturance. So today what I would like to talk to you about more than nurturance itself, and we'll start there, but what happens with you when you neglect to nurture yourself, and what do you need to do to nurture yourself? Yesterday we talked in the group about what is your definition of nurturance. And in that situation, it was quite related to others' relationships. What I'd like to put up is just kind of a compilation of those terms. And these are quite similar to what the crowd developed yesterday in terms of what defines nurturance. I know I'm going to be in your way, so I'm going to move over here and hope the microphone will connect it well. When one begins to think about this common term that you hear in society, often nurturance is thrown around quite liberally. And what I have done as part of my research as a nurse is look at that root of my profession to see what truly does it mean in a variety of settings across the age span. And in a number of disciplines, which I spoke about a bit yesterday, but just to review, I reviewed literature in education, in nursing, in medicine, in business, sociology, and psychology, to come up with what those disciplines termed nurturance. And the defining attributes, or the ways in which one nurtures, were these. To nourish, you know some similarities between this and the definition. To educate, to protect, to empower, to praise, to discipline, to comfort, to support, to communicate, to accept, to appreciate, understand, empathize, and be accessible. Now, yesterday we talked a bit about what that meant in relationship with another, with the other. What I'd like to do today is to turn the tables just a tad bit. And think about if you were now to take those terms and apply them to your life, what do you need? And so that's the template on which we will build our discussion today. I teach an early parenting class in my home region, which is part of the overall childbirth education class where, you know, you go and learn how to breathe and you carry the pillows and that kind of thing. And a few years ago, I approached the local healthcare institution. I said, you know,
I appreciate childbirth education classes. I haven't gone through them myself. Yes, I know that's important, but you are preparing for probably at most 24 to 36 hours of a couple's life. And what I'm concerned about is the rest of their life, the 18 concentrated years, and then all of the other years beyond that, that you continue to be a parent. You start being a parent at the moment you realize you're pregnant, as a couple or as an adopting family, you get that call and you realize you are going to be a parent, and then it never ends. It never ends until you do. So presenting that topic to the local healthcare institution, it took a bit of time, took a couple years of patience and discussion, but eventually we were able to put in at least a one class session on what we're calling now early parenting or transition to parenting. And the exercise that I do with the parents as they begin, and I teach this with an early childhood educator, and we have a really nice dynamic going back and forth between her expertise and mine. We ask them, what do you think you need to do? Now, these are all first-time parents. What do you think you need to do to nurture your child? Well, then they come up with some of these things. They talk about their ideas of what a perfect parent is, and then they realize that maybe there isn't a perfect parent, and they come to that. But they realize, they talk about nurturance, and there's some commonalities. Then what I do is what I'm doing with you today, is turn the tables and say, now, how often in your life do you concentrate on the importance of nourishing, the importance of educating your cognitive skills, the importance of protection and safety in your life, the empowerment piece of advocating for yourself in a variety of situations? Who praises you? Do you go somewhere to get it? Do you live within a system that can provide that for you? What kind of self-discipline do you have? Where do you need to set your limits and boundaries? Who comforts you? Who supports you? How is communication between you and your significant others? Acceptance, appreciation, understanding, empathizing, who does that for you? And who is accessible to nurture you? So just think, now just thinking about that, I want to turn the tables a bit to the perspective of toxic nurturance. And I'm just naming this myself because it seems to work for a variety of people that I know, among whom you may be some. How many of you, and you don't have to raise your hands, this is not a bean counting session, but how many of you might not find yourself in caregiving positions? I, as a professional, I'm a nurse, that is what I do, that is my role. I am a mother, I am a wife, and in all of those roles, I give care. I dare say there are very few of you, I assume probably none, that aren't caregivers also in your lives. And when you begin to realize the importance of caring, of course you take that on with fervor, with almost a religious fervor when you're an early parent, a new parent, and or with a new job in terms of looking at your colleagues and what that work relationship is, or in a new marriage or a new partnership relationship. And then there's that beginning end of the spectrum where you learn what's necessary, what's needed in this relationship. But there also can be the other end of the spectrum where nurturance happens too much of this happens between you and someone else, to the exclusion of your own health. And this is a bit far back, so I'm going to move it just a tad for people. From a biopsychosocial spiritual perspective is the perspective that I work from as a nurse. And so here I'm calling the holistic nurturance self-care perspective, but pretty easy to see that though we think, and in our world, we in the Western thought, sometimes we are divided up into four segments, but really we know that we're not. I had an interesting experience this morning. I was in Narnia, and it's interesting. I suppose they were up to at least 10. They were probably 7 to 10 in the group where I was. And you start talking to them about what happens when you get scared. Well, my heart beats fast and I get sweaty. They know at that age that their mind affects their body. Sometimes I think that we forget that. We forget how much our mind affects our body. And we begin to stop taking care of all of those perspectives in our life so that our own self-nurturance doesn't happen. Duffy, in 1992, in his or her, I'm not sure, doctoral dissertation, came up with a conclusion that nurturing behavior competed with personal needs and decreased self-esteem and increased the level of depression among a group of females. These women believed and accepted society's imperatives to nurture. This was a female-only study. And their conclusion that is, then, that the sense of being forced to choose nurturance in this society over their own needs led to a silencing of their own self-expression, distrust of themselves, and suppression of their self-awareness. So I'm here this week promoting nurturance, but I'm also concerned about too much of others to the exclusion of your own health. Another study done in 1997, and this is the last study I'm talking about, and then we'll move on, studied caregivers. And this was professional caregivers as well as family caregivers who were in a variety of home care situations, and found that those caregivers who balanced engagement and detachment, in other words, the ability to engage fully in the caring aspect, in the caring moment, and to detach at appropriate times without the need to control, affected positively the outcomes of care. These caregivers made conscious choices based on their own emotional needs, and they set and maintained limits and boundaries and were able to monitor the balancing process while recognizing the importance of self-care. So that's another place where you look at nurturance and see the importance of setting limits and boundaries, and that's the discipline perspective. When I think of a variety of caregiving situations, it is often, we often talk as, particularly nursing faculty, when we come back home, back to the office, after a grueling week in clinical, how many times that lifestyle issues have caused or contributed significantly to a person's or a family's illness. And how many times we wish we could have gotten to that individual or family way, way earlier. So this is my opportunity to get to you earlier, or to talk about the things that balance lives. And I would also like to recommend a few books that are in the bookstore, which you may find very helpful for your own shopping pleasure. There is a book in the bookstore called 101 Ways to Nourish Your Soul. And this is kind of little examples of activity kinds of things that you can do. And there is a book called Having It All. Body, Mind, Heart, and Spirit Together Again at Last. So what I talked about that we have done in our Western culture in terms of splitting us up, this book pulls it back together a bit. Another book, I'm not sure if they have in the bookstore, but if you haven't seen it somewhere, you could look for this. And this is by Thomas More, who is a wonderfully insightful contemplative writer, Care of the Soul. And this speaks to the spirituality portion of our life.
And I just discovered this in this bookstore, and it's another book by Alan Loy McGinnis, the author of The Friendship Factor, a while ago. But this talks about the balanced life, achieving success in work and love. And I've only read about the first half of the book, but I can highly recommend the first half. Because what he does is take away the myth that you must split off your work and your personal life. For those of us who have tried to do that for years, I realized that I can't do that. I must find ways to integrate my life. And he presents it in such a way that there are a number of practical things that you can do to do that. And many of you have learned how to do that already. So, at this point, I'd like to buzz out a little bit to you, just in terms of some dialogue. What have you found are the things, if you can look at this list if you need, but you also know, what are the things that you have found most recently in your lives that are the nourishing, nurturing activities that you do, that you don't get to do very often, but when you do them, you feel really good? Anything goes.
Dad had flowers.
Pardon?
Dad had flowers.
Dad had flowers.
No, we snap off the
see, you have to interpret. I don't do that. I'm like, oh, is that a musical group? I didn't know.
To go out into the garden and remove the spent blossoms.
Oh!
Or blossoms.
Oh!
Do it quietly without rush.
Do it quietly without rush, and to have time to do that. Is really, that is delightful.
Reading a good book,
okay. You know, it's really not fair to ask this question when you're at Holden for a week, is it? Because here you're doing a lot of those things, but yes.
Small groups?
Small
Bible study or just small groups.
Okay.
No groups.
Uh-huh, so that relationship factor. Pardon?
Going back to school.
Going back to school, who said that? Yeah, okay, great.
Hour and a half massage by a professional.
Oh, yes. Oh, you know, a good friend of mine gave me a gift certificate for a massage for my birthday this year, and I've never had one. A professional massage. I always had it like in the hospital or you know, my partner and I, but never had had that quiet, full hour. Boy, that is amazing. That's really delightful. If you have not done that.
But I always thought the metaphor the airlines have is so good is you put on your own oxygen mask first. And I think that has always been kind of where I come to in my parenting, is to say if I don't take care of myself, I have nothing with my kids.
The vessel.
Also bottle for them, the importance of taking care of yourself.
The vessel becomes quite empty.
But I always like that metaphor for the airlines when they say, you know, if it invented the decreased pressure, you don't put on your own oxygen mask, but then help the person next to you.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. Other ideas of nourishing activities, nurturing activities that you have done.
You mentioned the vessel being empty. I think part of the problem is knowing when the cup is empty and before it gets to the place where it's harder to fill.
Okay. And that's that whole self-assessment piece that we don't necessarily in our culture take time to do. And I think that when one takes that self-reflective time, you know. I mean, I've got a tool here that we're going to look at just a bit to give us some ideas of what are some nice goals. But to take the time to do that is a challenge. Yes?
I was at Holden 3 years ago. I met a man who said that he called his mother every night. And if it was long distance, you know, so he was up here, it's difficult. But if he could, he called her every night.
Uh-huh.
I thought, I could do that. Why don't I do that? And so I would suggest that it's worked out wonderfully. So I think that calling somebody who's not living in your household, but who will nurture you back and just share the day.
Uh-huh.
Very nice.
Wonderful
for
mother, too.
Yes. Oh, she benefits. That's neat. I have a sister-in-law who's moving, and she has, she was just married to my brother a year ago, but they're moving in Missouri, still within the same state, but she's moving away from her very best friend who went through the death of her first husband with her, and she's moving away from that close relationship, and that's the hardest thing for her. And I said, call long distance. don't let that, you know, stop you. This is the time to just stay connected because you need her and you need that that insight. Other things. What do the men do? You did your a Bible study group. Other ideas.
Saying no.
Saying no. Okay. Building in the pause and saying no. And you know, when you say no, you say yes to yourself. Sometimes that helps to take away that sense. And I am a person who grew up committed to just about everything. And I can commit to a multitude of things. My husband can tell you that. He's sitting back here smiling. And one of my colleagues has been trying to coach me a bit more, saying, you know, Sonia, if you say no to something you can say no to, you're saying yes to the things that you really like to do. And I think that's an important thing to remember, that your time just will never drop out of the sky for you. But you can create that sacred space for yourself. Other ideas of nurturing activities. Yes?
Taking time for exercise and I think trying to write, but not to the point where it's really a drag. So you're taking care of your body.
Okay.
Sense of taking care of your body.
Okay. And that feels good. It really does. You know, I can come up with about a million different excuses to not exercise some days. Oh, I'm too busy, I have to do this, but I feel so good when I am finished. And that's that whole mind-body connection. When you're pumping those endorphins, you know, and you create your own natural high with that exercise. And in addition to that, you know, the exercise is giving you new oxygen to your brain, new oxygen to all those tissues. And I always tell my students when we talk about this, the first quarter of nursing, because nursing, you know, we tend to have a pretty demanding major as well. And I talk to them about the importance of staying balanced once they're in this difficult new major of theirs, that I always feel that an hour of exercise a day, and I actually did hear this scientifically someplace, but it truly seems to bear out, that about an hour of exercise a day gives you 2 hours more of work time or play time or family time, because you just have that much more energy. So for those of you who are sitting here feeling pretty hot and unenergetic at this time in the afternoon, this may not be the time to do it, but boy, a morning run on the 10-mile creek trail or falls trail was pretty nice this morning, and it felt really good. Other ideas?
Sewing.
Okay, so that creative portion of you. And do any of you find that, do you love your work? How does work feel for you?
I think it's possible to love work, except that there is too much work. If there was not so much work, I started because I love it, and I love it a little, I love some of it. I have a sense that's a problem for a lot of people.
Oh, I think that's true. I think there has been a lot of research done in terms of work and the work amount currently, and that we're working longer hours in adding more projects on. That is the case in my workplace, and I talk to many other educators, and I think that's the case in a lot of situations. So that we're just probably not going to get it back, is my thought. But what I find too about work is that if I have a project I'm really excited about, that for me it's creating a new class session that I think is going to really zap that energy into the classroom, or when I have time to do research. For instance, my most favorite thing to do is interview qualitative research, particularly with families. When I have time to do that, that for me feels like the creative work part, but there's a lot of that drudgery work part.
They nurture you back.
Yes! That's the
sometimes more work, you don't get any nurturing from it, and sometimes you do.
But it's that reciprocity of caring that happens within those situations, particularly with patients in a healthcare setting, or the students who will come and say, oh, thank you, I really needed you to be there for that. Or if you're working in a classroom situation, and maybe it only takes one or two students to come up at the end and say, you know, I finally get it. I finally understand what I've been trying to learn. So that is that reciprocity. And that's why I think that nurturance happens best, and probably happens only the best, within community, wherever you are. Within this community, it's happening within your work community, within your family community, in a variety of settings. But it's that creative piece, back to you, that feels really good. Anybody else? What else nurtures you and makes you feel good?
Yes. I'm alone with my Lord.
When you're alone with your Lord. Okay, so your whole spiritual sense, your spiritual life. And do you get an opportunity to do that on a regular basis?
Every day. I can't miss it.
Okay. And that's a real important piece of spiritual development, that it's regular, that it's, you know, whether it's prayer, meditation, kind of a centering moment, time away. For some people who are going to do something particularly stressful, that time away or that meditation, or for me as a practicing nurse, when I know I'm going to go into a room where there's a really difficult situation that I'm going to have to face, or a difficult explanation or a bad message that I'm going to deliver, I have to pause outside the room and just, you know, I do my prayer at that moment to just center and be conscious of myself and my spiritual dimension. And that helps me to also go in and make that happen. Yes,
Matt? Take a nap or go for a walk.
Take a nap or go for a walk.
I'm not talking exercise walking.
Just contemplative walk. Yes, yes. And there's, you know, there's, I gotta move. And there is exercise and then there's movement. You know, sometimes there's aerobic exercise, 20 minutes, 3 times a week or 5 times a week or whatever you can fit in. But there's also just plain movement, whether that be, you know, a quiet walk, or sometimes people choose to do a lot of Tai Chi, yoga, those kinds of a little bit more low key, but also just moving or taking a walk. And what else was it that you said?
I said taking a nap.
Taking a nap. You know, our bodies are wonderful things. When they're tired, they tell us so. But we have drugs to keep us going. So we caffeine up, we sugar up, we eat up, and ignore all of those natural circadian rhythms, those natural biorhythms that we have within ourselves. We are, as the Creator did, fearfully and wonderfully made. We are created with those internal mechanisms to tell us when we are hungry, when we are tired, when we are stressed out. Some of you may have been in situations where either work situations or family situations have brought you to the point of not being able to make a decision to save your soul, or not to be able to problem solve. That is a sign. Your cognitive self is telling you it is at its end. It is time now to lay back and get some nurturing of your own. Yes?
We have come up here with a number of ways that we can seek nurturing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm hearing you say that you're working with young families. My memory of going away from home for the first time
not knowing that I needed nurturing, not knowing how to find it, was the big time of my life when I was bereft. Because I come from a nurturing family, a nurturing community in the church, my first time away from home in a situation, and nobody told me I needed to be nurtured. To know that you needed to reach out and find it was something I think number of young people who leave home have to learn the hard way. And I'm hearing all of us have, number of us have young children who eventually be leaving. It's information or a permission that we have to give them to do, to not just do well at school, but to find time for themselves, to be themselves, to try some things that are exciting.
And that brings me to thinking about family, within the family or within relationships or groups of people, how few times we actually sit down and talk about family goals or group goals or where we want to be, what we want to do. We do those things at work, those of us who are in those kinds of work settings that, you know, are strategic planning and setting goals and meeting objectives and those kinds of things. But to do that within family sometimes is very helpful so that you can get a sense of what the priorities are for you as a family. And not only does that help within the family system to create some clarity of where your values are, but it also models to children or models to those others in your system that may not have had that nurturing responsibility or that nurturing perspective as they were developing, that it is important to do that goal setting time. Not that it has to be a rigid time, but it clarifies your values just a bit. In addition, I think that what you're saying about modeling is very important. That and that's as we, if we are the people in our families who are toxically nurturing, that is viewed, that is seen, that is experienced. I think there's one thing I wanted to show you is that nurturing is not the same as enabling or hovering. That nurturing is an active, intentional process. When you're looking at what do I need to do to nourish, to protect, to communicate, nurturing is growth producing, not growth stifling. That's the kind of the old adage of childhood development, to not do for a child what they can do for themselves. That's how they're learning, they're pushing their skills and abilities. Nurturing is empowering. It supports interdependence, not dependence, and also not independence. And the difference is that when one nurtures and supports interdependence, it gives support to the biblical call, really, to live in relationship with others. And that's the importance of interdependence. Nurturing also involves guidance and promotes coping ability and problem solving. And sometimes that's very difficult for us to do. Sometimes as an individual, I wish someone would just tell me what to do. Tell me where I need to be, what I need to focus on. Alan Loy McGinnis in this book talks about the most successful people in the world. You know that he studied all these successful people. And that the most successful people in the world have a focus. They don't get all tied up in the minutiae. They have a focus. And so sometimes I wish someone would help me figure that out, but I'm figuring it out slowly as time goes on, what I'm good at. And sometimes it takes a while. And I think that as I experience life, it gets better, it gets easier. And to have a nurturing environment, a nurturing family, a nurturing work situation helps me to develop being the person that I can be. I think that last night we were at a staff gathering and Somebody said, oh, Holden is the place where we learn to be, can be for you the place where you learn to be the people we should be. To pull all of the pieces of us together. And I think that's also an important part of nurturing, so that when you're talking about recognizing or taking that self-reflection time, this is an important time for you. But we can't all do this every day. Jesus himself did 40 days in the wilderness. When he had it, he went out. And so where do you go for that 40 days in the wilderness? And what is your wilderness? Do you have a wilderness? Where is it that you can go that there are no demands on you?
Private retreat. My husband supports that I go at least 1 week a year. He takes the kids.
Uh-huh.
It's critical.
It is critical to do that. And you can do that, and that's your annual thing. But I would guess you probably have other ways that you do it on a more routine basis.
Unplug the phone.
Oh yeah.
Unplug the phone and either turn down or unplug the answering machine. Both, because I don't like to know people trying to get hold of me. You know? So I don't want to screen calls. I don't want them to get into the house at all. They can stop the telephone call.
Yeah, and that can certainly happen so easily, because we're within systems where our attention is demanded.
Well, I mean, my kids are older. I mean, my youngest is 13, so, but I mean, they know now that after 10 o'clock at night, mom's off duty unless it's something that's an emergency. This is not the time to come say, well, I need such and such for school tomorrow, or can you check me in tonight? It's after 10, I'm off duty.
Okay, so she has hours that she enforces, and that's really okay. That is a good thing to do in terms of setting your own limits, your own boundaries. And it's okay to do that with family. You have perfect license to do that. You'll come back a fresher, better person because of that in the morning.
It yes. doesn't mean they get sick in the middle of the night, I won't.
Yeah. So if they're throwing up, you will attend to that after 10.
Okay. The other thing I found helpful, rather than to-do list, is to-do-done list.
To-do-done list, okay.
Instead of after 10 and say, this is what I got done today.
Yeah, and to kind of praise yourself, if no one else will.
My primary job still is as mother, and sometimes those jobs don't seem to always come back to get done again.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes it's really reinforcing to write down everything you have got done. Especially when the to-do list is still sitting there with everything on it. I didn't get to this because, so-and-so called and I needed to spend time with them or whatever. But, sometimes the to-do things don't get done because there are more urgent things.
We can beat ourselves up pretty well, can't we, for what we don't get done. But.
Well, it's much healthier to say what I did do.
Yeah. Consequences of nurturance, then, for you. If you are able to take the time to do those things that nurturance requires, these are the expected outcomes. That you have a sense of creativity, that you have a positive self-worth, a caring personality, positive social relationship choices, holistic health, which is this, intact coping ability, and a sense of well-being in the nurturer. So, if you have truly taken time to nurture yourself, then you will have a sense of well-being. And how many times hasn't that been the case? That you did something for yourself that you just had to wedge in among everything else, and it felt good. It felt good to have done that, and it was important to do that. Okay. What I want to put up now are some... This is actually a tool that involves the biologic, psychologic, spiritual, and sociologic realms. And what I'd like you to do, not necessarily, I don't want you to do the numbers thing in terms of looking and counting and creating this. And this is something I use with my students. But what I want you to look at are the statements, and it will give you a sense of
how well you may or may not be caring for yourself. And some of you have listed those things. Exercising daily, or first, have a good level of energy. Sometimes that's a good barometer. Do you feel like you have any energy left to do the things you need to do? You don't smoke, you drink alcohol in moderation, you consume limited amounts of saturated fats and refined sugars, which is easy here this week, unless you go to the ice cream shop, which I do. consume no artificial sweeteners.
Why is that?
Related to the NutraSweet controversy and involvement in terms of allergy and I don't know a lot about NutraSweet. I consume a lot of it myself, so I don't get into it. But artificial sweeteners are considered one of those chemical easy things that you can overdo. And some people do truly have an allergic reaction that creates headaches and that kind of. But you're not going to be perfect on all of these. That's what I've said, because I'm rationalizing it, see. Regular dental and physical checkups, practicing safe sex, being aware of the negative effects of prescription and over-the-counter drugs, and feeling rested after a night's sleep. This is the physical component, and you know, a lot of this. The research that went into developing these questions is specific to a holistic perspective.
Attention and alcohol in moderation, but no artificial sweeteners.
All right. So let's put artificial sweeteners in moderation back. Okay. And this is the social perspective, that you have supportive people around you. Do you make friends easily? Are you assertive? Do you participate in activities that help meet the needs of others? Do you feel that you're a productive part of society? Do you participate in social activities with friends and family? Do you trust others easily? And are you open and honest in your relationships with others? So that's the social dimension.
Excuse me.
Yes.
You said participate in social activities that help meet the needs of others. How about participating in social activities that help meet in there someplace?
Well, this is the social perspective. So perhaps participating in social activities with friends and families is that relationship piece. Perhaps. Yeah. But also, there's a lot of research that talks about and deals with the positive aspects of having done good for others and truly the positive changes that happen in people's lives because of that. Are you open to new ideas? Do you have broad interest in many subjects? Set reasonable and challenging goals? Anticipate stress and are prepared to cope with it? Staying up to date with current events, have a good attention span, and take care of your role responsibilities. And this is the mental aspect. This is long as well. Emotionally, having a high level of self-esteem, acknowledging and accepting feelings, accepting others' feelings without judgment, able to express your own feelings openly and appropriately, having an adequate means for self-expression, knowing that not expressing emotion can lead to illness, seeking help when you're not dealing with your emotions, and feeling a sense of contentment with your life. That's the emotional perspective.
If I showed that to the parents in my classroom, they would be afraid to have their kids come to my school. Put that one back up again and just see how the families
okay.
can even deal with two or three of these.
What's your question there?
Parents, kids, I even watch families coming to church. Have three or four kids getting in quietly, sitting down. I know the heckiness of getting them there to that point. That these things are really, these are hard to do.
Well, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, physiologic, nourishing, all of those things are here, and we can't negate those. Those are important. What this tool is focusing on high-level wellness. And so this is the best of all worlds, and very few of us, I dare say, are going to get to all of them all of the time, but they're goals. And they're goals not only of disease prevention, but of health promotion and wellness. Wellness at a higher level than just avoiding illness, which is more of a medical model perspective. And I'm looking at a different model. I'm looking at a health model, and this is a health system. So that's that one. And then the last one is spiritual. And what you talked about already, that you center, pray, or meditate daily. You have a relationship with a higher power. You have attended regular religious services. You live in accordance with your spiritual values, and sometimes that's a challenge. You're tolerant of other spiritual beliefs. You have faith in other human beings, and you believe that the universe has meaning. So the spirituality dimension has to do with meaning and seeking meaning within the universe and within your relationship with your creator. Okay.
Mary, is this the result of,
Yes.
Is that the result of research? I mean, that we've discovered that people that have these things do better. Mm-hmm. And that was true for all of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. So then, of course, you can total the scores and do all that jazz and figure out where you are related to at what point you are in those terms. But I think it's helpful to look at what's possible, look at what's out there, look at what might be, what could be, if one had time, if one focused on those issues in one's life. I think to reach the true nurturance level in your lives is a challenge, and it takes commitment to do that. It is not impossible, and it sometimes has to happen in ebb and flow a bit. You don't always have full time to commit to it, but it's possible. If you would take just, I think we have about 5 minutes to buzz within, like say, four of you together, and what's your first response of, gee, I wonder if that would... I want to leave you with a biblical perspective of nurturance, and that segues into tomorrow when I will discuss the biblical model of nurturance. Now, it seems that today I've been talking a lot about what's in the research, what's in my practice, what's in your lives, and it is not unusual at all that one should be able to go to the Bible and find a model of nurturance. We were created to live in community. We were created to live and care for each other as well as ourselves. And we have a wonderful, wonderful biblical model to do that. And so that will be the focus of tomorrow, when I look at and we discuss all of those attributes and see what our Creator has to say, see what the disciples were living with, see what Jesus has to say, and see what the early communities in the Christian world were dealing with. And so that is a little bit of what will happen in tomorrow's session. But today, I want to leave you with just the thought that nurturance is truly not a new wheel. We were given some design to nurture in the promises to the Hebrew people. As you think of the stories that occurred amongst the Hebrew people, as you think about the Ten Commandments in terms of living in relationship with others. You know, the first few commandments are our relationship with God, but he knew, or
or she knew, or the Creator knew, that we would need a lot more help living with each other. And so the rest of the commandments are all dealing with our lives with each other. The Proverbs, some of the Proverbs are just simply wonderful and have validity today the same as they did when they were recorded. The parables of Jesus. Some of the parables of Jesus are simply refreshing, I think, to think one of the things that, and not in terms of necessarily a parable, but the what Jim Smith read yesterday morning in the Let the Children Come Unto Me, Jesus was always telling his disciples, now think about this, I want the children to be here. And one could think, if one has a background as a pediatric nurse and has has an interest in family nursing, that Jesus really had a good sense of our constant need to think about what life is meant to be and to look at the model of children and to think about that. And Paul's letter to the early church. We'll look at some Galatians passages that really give us a sense of what nurturance should be. And not only with others, but within our relationship with ourselves. Okay, any other thoughts or questions? What do you think?
Kathy got a good point, bring it up.
I just said that every time I see a quadrant like this, I reflect on what the Bible says, because it says that Jesus grew in wisdom, in his stature, in favor with God and man, and that quadrant is always the same.
Right, right.
That each of those things has to be in each of our lives.
And when they're out of balance, we know it, don't we? Or those around us do, perhaps. Sometimes we don't. We aren't always aware of it ourselves, but that's the benefit of living in relationships or living in communities or you know, sometimes it's your work colleagues. I don't know if the person was here who was here yesterday, I don't think so, who is a teacher in my hometown of Mankato, Minnesota. And she shared and she reminded me of an incident that had happened with a teacher in our high school who committed suicide about a year ago. And it was a very tragic death because he was the high school counselor who was absolutely the friend to everyone. He was wonderful. He was who you would want your child to go to. He was who you would want as a friend. His colleagues had no idea what he was dealing with. He was taking on more and more of the issues of the children in his school and had suffered with depression for quite some time in total silence. And his death was an absolute shock to them all and to us as a community. But what she said, which was very important, I think, was that that incident itself created in that cadre of teaching colleagues a new understanding of how important it was to watch out for each other, to see how important it was for them to be attuned to each other's needs. And she said she has taught in a variety of school systems, and she said this was her first year teaching in the school system, that it was the most nurturing place she's ever been. People were constantly asking her, how are you doing? What do you need? How can I help you? And praising her. All of the things that we need to do with others and in those relationships. And that's in her work setting. So many times that does happen within a work setting, if it's a healthy work setting. Alan Loy McGinnis presents the option of, if you're not working in a nurturing work setting, and because you know that it could have long-term detrimental health effects related to a variety of issues, leave. It's important to do that. It's radical, But it's important to do that. He also talks about, you know, the build-up, the successful beings that he has done some research with. And most of them don't start with a bang and stay there. Most of them start with little rises and dips. More rises and dips, and more rises and dips. So that maybe the dip isn't so bad, because there'll be a rise that will come after it. And I think that's important to think about as you go out and live this life elsewhere, aside from here. Yes?
I extend your discussion.
Uh-oh. No! Am I supposed to be done before 45? I think I am.
Five.
Okay. We'll keep going just a little bit.
The book, that's an easy one. But I would like to know more about what you did in that work environment to encourage the nurturance of each other. Because it sounds like something is working. Did it just happen?
In the work environment that I'm describing?
The one where the suicide took place.
Yes.
Subsequently.
I do know that they had some interventions. They had some psychologists come in who worked very intensively with them. Not only did they have those of you who may be from the Midwest, actually this probably hit the papers nationwide, I can't recall, but we had a meningitis outbreak in Mankato, and we had a death of a high school student, and this all happened within the same year. So we had some intensive counseling, and so that I think that often that is how it happens, that we hit a crisis point or that we hit a bottom point, and then we have to figure out how to get up from there. And hopefully we've got the system around us that will support that. And thank goodness this administration and community supported all of that and created a much healthier work environment.
But you're not able to say any more about what some of the results of those interventions yielded?
Because I don't teach in that school system. I mean, it's the school system in my community, but I don't know exactly what they did, but I could put you in touch with the person who was speaking with me about it.
Sounds like something worked, and it really did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other thoughts? Okay. Thank you for your attention, and continue the conversations about how you can care for yourself. At under the bell, or at lunch, or dinner, or whatever. Thank you.